America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a roll call, please.
President Peace?
Here.
Vice President Lee?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
Director Steele?
Here.
Okay, this is a agendized public meeting. At the beginning of this meeting, we'll have the ability for the public to make comments to us on anything that's not on the agenda. Do we have any public comment?
I think that we're going to have PG&E come up first.
Come on up.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is Tom Guarino. I'm the manager for public affairs for the East Bay Alameda County, Costa County. And fortunately or unfortunately, during the situation we had with the gas challenges, I was in and out of the hospital with a lung infection, so that's my excuse. But I am, I was actively involved over the phone. I want to compliment Rick for the tremendous cooperation and collaboration during that that most challenging time, tracking him down out of state and the like. So it's a, you know, just a brief update. I think part of our pledge was to keep everyone posted on the cause of the accident, what we can do to help customers that were adversely affected. Unfortunately, both of those, the timing is just a little off. I'm supposed to have information on both of those next week. I was hoping to deliver some news today, but unfortunately that isn't the case. But we'll follow up and be really proactive, working with the county manager and staff to make sure, and the media, to make sure that we get that information out. We did want to thank you. The cooperation was fantastic. I personally am honored to come here today and present a couple of $5,000 checks. One to the town for allowing us to use the center as a warming center for many of your citizens during that outage. This is don't cash it yet, but this but maybe that the chair I could.
Oh wait, I'm all wait.
How would you like to?
Why
do
don't
this?
You guys?
Bill,
why don't?
Why don't?
Yeah, I'd like to see his checkbook.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Take it into the ATM. But there, no strings attached. However, you like to use this for anything and everything. So.
Smile for the camera.
But we really, really appreciate all your cooperation very much. So
we saw a lot of blue trucks that we didn't really have.
Many of those just came down from the fires up in, and they were in a bit of a break, and we just sent them over here. And I don't know if anybody from the school district is here, but oh, why don't you come up?
I shouldn't have raised my hand.
No, we had another $5,000 for the school district, for really the middle school at Timber Point, but we couldn't make it out to them, but we had to make it out to the school district. But again, that was a great warming center that really helped a lot of citizens, and we really, really appreciated that. So are you the superintendent of schools?
I'm a teacher at Timber Point.
Oh, perfect, perfect. So you can take that back to him.
Okay?
Oh,
Lord. All right.
Very good. Good
timing. Alicia, share those with me, too.
No strings attached, however you want to.
Let's go.
However you want to say. We're not too far from a casino right here.
Before.
But again, thank you much, and there will be more news coming as to the impacts on customers and also the cause, which there's a lot of theories, but we want to require an independent third party to investigate this to see what exactly happened, and we'll be releasing that to you and the public. So.
Well, we want to thank PG&E for the service that they provided. So that was a difficult situation. There's a lot of safety issues involved. There's enough manpower to keep things rolling. But you guys did your job, though. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I'll take that back to our careers.
Before Tom leaves, I've been working with Tom and his staff over the past couple of weeks on a community benefit project. We've looked at a number of projects that you're looking at me with a quizzical look.
No, go ahead.
Okay, good. I want to make sure we're...
we're good.
Okay, good. We've looked at a number of different projects that might benefit the community, and we zeroed in on one project that PG&E has generously decided to contribute to if the board wants to move in that direction. We looked at resurfacing the two tennis courts, we looked at lights in the tennis courts, but the one project we felt that the community would really benefit from, especially our youngsters, our little kids, is the Roberta Fuss Tot Lot needs to be renovated. And with that, I will turn that over to you.
So we wanted to go over and above, just be the good corporate citizen that we should be. And we looked at that particular project, and there was a component of that project that was eligible for part of our charitable grant program, and that's the actual physical
playground.
The equipment, yeah. And so we were able to provide you with a grant that was $17,000 for that equipment. So we're going to be purchasing that on behalf of the town as well. So,
thank you very much for that. And I will echo what President Peace said about the response. I was out of town when it happened. I was fortunate not to be here and didn't have to physically get the repercussions of no gas. But when I returned several days later, you guys were still on site, still came over the house, came back over when there was some smell of gas and tightened up a few things. And the response time was just phenomenal. So please pass on to your crews. The one thing I will say is that you can also take back to your administration. The communication on the website was very, very poorly taken care of, especially for somebody who's out of town. It read that there was no leak. It told you that it was going to be turned on at a certain time, and it was just that part of it could use some better. I know it was difficult in those situations, but I would just give you that as feedback. And then I just did want to throw out too that we have a great swim team that's looking for a bigger pool out in the back here. Thank you very much for your generosity.
You bet. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Yes. What more depth
is there? Any other public comments?
Okay,
please go forward.
Yeah, go ahead. Go do it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Just hope he's up.
Looking for me.
That's right. No wonder I was confused.
First, the popularity of pickleball in Discovery Bay is growing, and we expect it to continue to grow, and we need to plan for that. Secondly, our great town has but two dedicated pickleball courts, and the condition of these two courts is worrisome. Three, we have a proposal we're submitting to you today for your consideration that addresses both one and two. So to begin, just how popular is pickleball in Discovery Bay? We measure this by court usage time. If you turn to page one in your booklet, you'll see that the chart depicts court usage time, beginning with the year 2012, which was when pickleball started in Discovery Bay, and through 2015, through last year. You can see that over the 3 years, the court usage time increased from 992 to 1,839, which is an 85% increase. Now we think that, in 2016, we expect to grow this number significantly for a number of reasons. We're continuing to use the word of mouth method, inviting the country acquaintances. We also, publish it in here. But we also just recently started using social media, Nextdoor and Facebook, and we're getting really good results from that. And additionally, pickleball is just a lot of fun. So if you turn to page two of your booklet, basically, that shows how the annual numbers on page one were derived. And it has a lot of details there. So we track attendance by individuals. So for example, if you wanted to know how many days I played and on which days I played, we could actually give you that level of detail. Okay, so at Cornet Park, as you know, we have two dedicated pickleball courts and one tennis court that also has been taped off with the pickleball court lines. The tennis court is in fairly good condition, but both of the pickleball courts have major cracks down through the center. On page 3 of your booklet, you actually see some photographs of the cracks. Not only do these cracks interfere with competitive play, because if you can imagine a ball bounces on the crack and it goes just any which way, you can't tell which way it's going, but we're also concerned that over time, a player's toe could be caught in that crack, and it could cause injury to the players. So we know the cracks aren't going to fix themselves, they're just going to continue to get worse. We've actually been measuring over time. So this brings me to point number 3, and which is our proposal. With the number of Discovery Bay pickleball players increasing and the condition of our two pickleball court surfaces getting worse, we ask that you consider making the single tennis court into 4 pickleball courts. Page 4 in the booklet provides a diagram of what we have in mind. We are prepared to share the cost. Okay? If the town replaces the single tennis court with 4 pickleball courts, the cost to the town would be the installation of a 5-foot fence with a gate and then painting the court lines. As I mentioned, we're willing to pay some of the cost, and if you approve this over the next 4 years, the Discovery Bay pickleball players would fund the nets. We would continue to utilize the 2 pickleball courts with surface cracks to train new pickleball players, maybe do some drills, maybe have a clinic, but we wouldn't use it for competitive play any longer until the cracks are fixed. Any questions?
No. Thank you for your input. We'll ask staff to put this on our list. I don't know if it's not in the mix of different things we're going to speak about today.
It is. Tangentially. However, I was out there yesterday, I looked at them, and I did discuss with Brian, our parks and landscape manager, and we did have them evaluated probably 1.5 years ago when the cracks first started, and at that time they were within acceptable tolerances. I don't know what the change has been from 1.5 years ago to today. I was out there, there are 2 running up down the length of both courts. What Brian and I discussed that we would do is we would wait until the season, the spring season comes and things start to dry out a little bit and see if there's any shrinkage of the courts, and then go in and grind and seal them and repaint them. So that's one option. And I do have another option for consideration for later in the board's discussion relative to pickleball courts as well, if it's something the board wants to pursue.
Okay, so we'll take it up at the appropriate
time. In any event, it will come back to the board for a discussion, most likely through the budget process, unless we bring it back as a maintenance item. So.
Welcome to come out
and
play.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment?
I would just like to say I'm part of the Discovery Bay Pickleball Club, and it's documented that pickleball is the fastest growing recreational sport in the United States. And our club continues to grow, and those cracks make it difficult, as we can't have competitive tournaments because of those cracks. I'd just like to mention that.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
In relation to converting that one tennis court,
you need to come up to the podium, please. We're only recording this for.
Okay. In regards to converting that one tennis court, you know, we do see players there occasionally playing tennis there, but we have all these courts right here that are underutilized, and I know it sounds terrible to get rid of the only tennis court left in the park, but I think that we're going to have need for more pickleball courts, and it's very popular, and it brings a lot of people to the park and to this area. It's getting to be where people are traveling all the United States to play pickleball, especially 40 and over. So. I would consider that.
All right, thank you. Any other public comments that's not on our agenda? Seeing none, we'll close public hearing and move into our planning workshop items. Manager Howell.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, and public. This is our annual budget, our annual kickoff to our budget season.
Excuse me one second. I forgot to mention that the refreshments over there, feel free to help yourself.
This is our annual kickoff to our budget season, but it's also an opportunity to look back at last year, see what we did, see what we accomplished, see if we misstepped anywhere, and moving forward to what staff is looking forward to in terms of moving projects forward into the next year. And I have some other items on here that we're going to need some input on. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and just get going with the presentation, and you guys can stop me at any point in time. As usual, this is a very free flow. It's not as formal as a board meeting. Because it's a workshop, no action can take place. You can give direction, but no action can take place. So with that, we're going to look at the 2015 year in review. We're going to look at an annual review of our mission, vision, values, and goals. We're going to look at the drought and how it affected us last year and moving into this year. We're going to look at our existing water meter and system-wide implementation program. We're going to discuss our filtration project and our water and wastewater rate studies. We're going to talk about the community center and some wastewater treatment plant improvements that we have some suggestions for. We're going to look at the budget calendar for this year, and we're going to talk anything that might come up as the next to last bullet and anything that the board wants to discuss. Very, very general. Last year, we completed our second full year programming at the community center. Revenues exceeded expectations, and we actually contributed to Zone 8 reserves. I'm looking forward to the same thing happening this year. We wrapped up the bond-funded segment of the capital improvement projects. We adopted the 2010 Urban Master Plan, albeit a few years late, but we got it done. And you will be adopting the 2015 update to that plan later this year. You amended Ordinance 25 regarding emergency drought restrictions. We worked through those drought restrictions and met standard conservation levels. We hosted a number of successful events here at the community center. We resurfaced the swimming pool. We opened the town's first ever off-leash dog park. Well 7 was put into service earlier this year. We hired Brian, our new parks and landscape manager. We hired our Mac as our recreation coordinator. We hired 2 new parks and landscape maintenance workers. In fact, all on February 2nd, coming up is our year anniversary. The park transfer agreement is still hung up in the county council's office. We received yet another clean fiscal audit. And 2015, from a public perception standpoint, was trouble-free. There was no bad press that cast a shadow on anything that we did. Regarding you as a board, staff, or the organization in general. With respect to the mission, vision, values, and goals, 2 years ago, this board reviewed them, made some wholesale changes, and requested that they come back annually at the board workshop. So this was last year. This is what was presented and adopted by the board last year for 2014. And so if the board doesn't have any changes to that, we can go ahead and dispense with that relatively quickly. I'm not sure if you have any comment on any of those.
I don't. Any other board members? No, looks like we're good.
Moving into the drought. This is a 6-year table. You can see 2010, 11, 12, 13. And 2013, from the state's perspective, was the base year. And our conservation requirements were based upon 2013 usage levels. And as you can look at the very bottom year total, it was 1303, basically. 1,302,000,000 gallons of water were produced. And if you go to the far right, next to the far right-hand column, in 2015, we produced 851 million gallons of water. Overall, what's highlighted in yellow on the right, far right-hand column, those represent the months that that the implementation of the restriction started in June, and they go through February. And you can see we hit 40, 43, 40, 34. The only month we did not hit. Was in the month of October. That should say, 32%. Did we hit 32 or 30%?
30.
My math is off. But overall, we were about 35% for the entire year. So we did meet our goals. Just briefly looking at the snowpack last year versus this year, looks like it's the same guy on the left, it's the same guy on the right, looks like the same right, same jacket and same hat. I thought that was kind of interesting, so he's actually out there doing it again. We've hit a five-year height in terms of electronic reading since 2011 when we hit 129%. The state indicates that they would have to have a snowpack of 150% by April in order to have an impact on the drought. The drought monitor that is published by NOAA and another bunch of other those alphabet soup agencies, you can see from 2015 to 2016 that dark red band in the middle has gotten wider and longer. There hasn't been much relief except for it looks like down in the southwest deserts where they actually had a lot of rain this year. So how did we do? We met and exceeded our 32% requirement, except for October, we hit 30%. We stand at 35% as of December 31st. On February 2nd, the state is having the water boards are conducting a meeting, and it's anticipated that they will adopt new regulations, new conservation regs, and those regs will continue the current conservation from March 1st, essentially, through to October 31st. With that, they have also adjusted different regions for seasonal rainfalls. And because of that, they're actually going to recommend a reduction in our conservation requirement from 32 to 29%. So that is something that is positive for us. And that allows the board to possibly, if you choose to do so, adjust some of your restrictions that you have in place. You can loosen some of them up, you can keep them in place. That's certainly a board consideration as to what you want to do moving forward. Things that I just threw out, open the splash pad possibly on the weekends, possibly change the frequency of outdoor watering, and also increase water at some of our parks. So, your first question of the day. What steps would you do you want us to pursue as it relates to the new the 29%, the new thresholds, as it relates to the community and meeting 29% moving forward?
I think that loosening up anything at this point is telling the public that the drought is over. Right now, everybody's volunteered to conserve, and it's worked out really well. And I think we should continue on doing what we're doing. I know the moment we start the splash pad up and the moment we start telling we're going to do this next, they've lowered our percentage. People are going to start watering. They're going to start doing more than they were doing before. You're going to be right back over 33% again, or 29%.
I happen to kind of agree with that. I think the splash pad would be a nice idea, but I think we'd have to wait a little while longer before we can make any kind of determination on what to do.
I think it's premature to be talking about the possibility of easing our drought restrictions, and when those things happen, then we can talk about it. But the splash pad on the weekends and putting out those type of projections right now is really premature. I think we're going to have another tough summer out here.
We're pretty tight on the numbers at this point. 29 to 32 could be not much change in some people's behavior. So why don't we leave it where it's at, see how the year unfolds, because it's going to always change during the middle of the year if things look better.
Agreed, and fortunately, I don't think anybody's standing in line to get on the splash pad this time of year anyway, so all I have to do is go outside. There's plenty of splash water coming from the sky, so I'm thinking that although I don't want to discount that possibility later in the year, if things go well, that we might be able to then provide that recreational opportunity for people in the town, but at this point, I don't think that decision really needs to be made.
One thing we do for the Ravenswood community that has been actually fairly well utilized is the past 2 years we've had the splash pad shut down. We have, because they pay for that splash pad and they built it out of their Prop 218 revenues, is that we provided those families, if they can provide proof of residency within that neighborhood, that we've given them a family pool pass for the season. as an offset to that. So that's worked out very well, and they've actually, a number of families have taken advantage of that, and that's actually been a positive for us.
Is those funds a annual fund on their property tax bill?
Yes.
Do we have those segregated into a specific account?
No.
Or that it just goes into general?
Their account is the funds that come in from the Ravenswood Community Zone 9. Those funds operate their entire zone, their landscaping, the park,
all right, so
so it's not specific for the splash pad. The splash pad was constructed from funding that was derived from that community.
So. Yeah, I feel that the program that staff has established to allow them to come over here at no charge on occasion is good.
Water meter rollout. I've spent a lot of time on this last couple months. As you know, we are in the process of changing out approximately 1,900 meter readers over on the west side of town for our current customer base. That project is expected to run about 90 days. It started earlier this month, beginning of the month. And they've been hitting about 60 a day. But those have been some of the really easy ones to hit, the plug and play ones, if you will. And when they have to go in and start splicing wires, things slow down dramatically. So that's taking place. As you know, the Urban Water Management Plan called for the meter program basically to comply with 20% by 2020, which is Senate Bill 7X that was adopted a number of years ago. There's approximately 3,800 homes that are currently unmetered. And the estimated cost to install meters on all remaining unmetered homes is between approximately $2.4 million with a $600,000 contingency. So we're looking at roughly $3 million. I was actually somewhat shocked at that number, that it was as high as it was. I was thinking it'd be more in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5, not 2.5 to 3. But there are some options that we have. One of which is National Meter and Automation is the company that we purchase our meters and reader equipment from. They are the exclusive provider of Badger meters within our region. And so they are the only company that we can use to purchase them from. We do have the option of entering into a professional services agreement with National Meter and Automation to be a one-stop shop. They hire the contractor. They're completely responsible for every aspect of the operation, and we just pay a bill at the end of the project. But depending on how the project costs get drilled down into, that would be the preferred option. It would be the least onerous option, and it would be probably the most efficient option in terms of the overall implementation of the program. The second one, and I'm actually leaning more towards this one at this point in time, would be to pre-qualify contractors, make sure that these contractors have done these types of projects before. They've been in communities, they've changed out from non-meters to meters. There's a number of those that have happened over the past few years. The one that I'm most familiar with is over in Lodi. It was a little bit larger because they actually replaced water mains and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit more extensive. Pre-qualified bidders, contractors. And then only those that are been pre-qualified are allowed to bid the project. That way you get a true sense of what the dollar amount really is. And so by going in that direction, it's going to be a little bit more time consuming, a little bit more lengthy to go through that process, but at the end of the day, you might get a better price for it. You then, depending on the price, since we already have a price, or we're working at a price from National Meter and Automation, we can always go back to them if that price doesn't match or is close or above the price that National Meter and Automation has provided to us. So that's something that I want to get direction from the five of you before we leave today. We have a little more to discuss on that, though.
Now, if you go out to bid under option B, National Meter and Automation could be one of those bidders.
Correct.
So that you have an open and competitive process, which hopefully should lead to the most competitive price with pre-qualified for quality as well.
Right. Right.
So that's an average of about $800 a meter. Your figure is what it costs to actually install these?
Yeah.
And some, but some are as simple as just going into the box and undoing the existing spacer that's there, putting the meter in, and that's not $800. And I would imagine that the majority are probably already have boxes that are in ready to do that. There's some that are going to be very difficult and cost more money. And we haven't talked about where that money's coming from.
Virgil can, well, exactly. We haven't discussed where that money's coming from. That's the next slide.
Okay.
To answer your question, Virgil, I think that there are probably, or Dina, you actually have those numbers. The quick and easy ones represent approximately how much of the overall system?
About 300. So that's about $113,000. And then we have a Type 3B. It's a new box with lid, exhaust tape, and materials. And that's the next priciest. And we have about 2,200 homes in that price range.
So that's the majority, is that. And so there are very few that
based
are...
Based on a survey?
We've surveyed all the meter. We've done a spot survey at pretty much every community, every neighborhood that is not metered, yes.
But this is an answer that will come out in the bidding process.
Correct.
So the contractors will be going out looking at it and telling us what they think it's going to cost for the simple ones and the more difficult ones.
This is the price that came from National Meter and Automation.
Correct.
And we're still drilling down on their numbers, but I just wanted to give you an update today as to where we're at with it. But in terms of the number of meters, and to answer Kevin's question, other than those properties that are the most difficult, where you have to tear trees out or concrete out because they covered them with concrete over a driveway or something, there's a handful of those.
Yeah, I think we've identified maybe about 50 of those, and that's 5 feet height, and that's no box or existing service, including fittings and hardscape. So, and that's roughly about $825 to do those.
So those homes are going to be notified separately that the cost to do theirs is going to be a little bit more than what the average is. But the way we've taken it, and it's certainly, there's so many ways to do this, we've just allocated the cost equally amongst the community and divided and conquered it.
At this point, we just need an average.
We're just doing
down
an average.
The contract, we can yes. start looking. Yep. Different types of
it. I just think from the funny part is that people I've talked to that know their meters are going to go in aren't really complaining about getting water meters, but I have heard this repeatedly, what's it going to cost to put it in? And it's very hard to go to somebody's house for 10 minutes and stick a new meter in and walk into and bill for it.
What's the cost of the meter and the reader?
The meter is $208 and the reader is $86.
Almost $400 of it is hard. Almost $400 is the cost of the equipment.
Yeah, no, I mean, which is fine. But I mean, when you're charging somebody $400 of labor to put it in, and they snap it in and they leave in 15 minutes, it's going to be hard to explain.
It's not that simple. It would be if it was a brand new home. It would be simple. Virgil, how many homes have you converted where you've changed out meter, boxes due to leaks?
About 350.
Those are the ones that Mark is referring to.
About
where they're just drop the meter in and go. They're there for 15 minutes. But those are properties that have already had work done to them because they've had a water leak. For example, President Peace's home had a water leak and it got a meter box in. So when we do go to put meters in, it's just a drop and go. Sure. There's only a handful of those. Of the 3,800, there's only a few hundred of them. The rest of them require cutting pipe, resetting boxes. It's a much more extensive process. Because those meter boxes were made, were 1970s and 80s, and meters technology has changed, especially because of the readers, and they sit up on top. And so you need a bigger box. It's a little bit more complicated than just dropping in a box.
And at this point, we haven't determined that. We know that's going to cost $600 to $700 on average for $3,800. How we would bill or absorb that charge has not been determined yet.
That's correct, and that's the next slide.
I thought we did talk about that.
Well, we have discussed it, but we've discussed it
today.
Yeah,
I haven't got really discussed it.
So we've been working, this kind of came out as an offshoot from the discussions with their financing team relative to the filtration project. And one of the conversations that we had, was when Saul Rosenbaum, our investment analyst, recommended, he was sitting in the meeting, says, why don't you just finance this part and do a 10-year financing and bill the customers monthly for a 10-year period. You end up using what you pay for. If you're there and you sell your house and move, you only pay for what you used, and at the end of the 10 years, it goes away. Based upon current numbers, it's 2.4 to 3 million. It's about $69 a month per account per resident, if we went in that direction. That is what the, you know, I've done straw polls and talking to people out in the community, asking, what would you prefer? Would you prefer write a check for it? Would you prefer 12 equal payments over the course of a year, or would you rather do it over a 10-year period until it costs you $6 to $10 a month? Every single person was $6 to $10 a month. That was your choice.
My question, I think I know the answer better at another meeting, just to the board. Approximately, what's the life expectancy of these units? When would they possibly be needed to be replaced?
They're 20-year meters, 20-year batteries. Within the first 10 years, they're exchanged at no cost. It's prorated after the first 10 years. Once the meter goes in, we actually own the meter. They pay a meter fee to us on an annual basis. It comes off your property taxes. Once that meter fee is paid, that money then goes into your reserves to be able to replace equipment as it fails. And so when it fails, if it fails, at some point in time it's going to fail. There's going to have to be money in there to replace the meters that fail. So 20 years from now, you're going to be going through, you know, a whole lot of replacement meters. It's not going to be a few here, a few there like it would normally be. But the technology's improved so much today than what it was. And National Meter has been, or Badger's been around since the early 1900s. They're over 100 years old. And so they pretty much got their system down.
Right. So if I understand it correctly, there'll be two fees if we go down this path. A $6 to $9, we'll figure that out, per month for 10 years. That fee at the end of 10 years goes away. But during the same 10-year period and into the future, there'll be approximately another $6 to $9 fee that goes into the reserve funds to help pay for any new equipment that needs to be replaced.
Do you know what the dollar amount is? Do you know what the dollar amount is that goes on the property tax bill for the meter? I think it's $60 a year. Yeah. I think it's around $60 a year that goes under. That's set up.
$5. That's $5 a month.
It's like
12 times 5 is 60. Yeah, somewhere in the $60 to $70 range.
But that would be part of the rate study that our consultant prepares. It looks at all the assets and looks at the.
And that's on the next slide.
We're going to be done early.
Keep up, will you, Rick?
So what? How does this feel to you? Does this feel like something that we should be pursuing? There's a lot of ways to do this, but this is the way that we've sat down and we've met with the Water Wastewater Committee's discussed it. We've discussed it briefly with the Finance Committee when we met last, which has been a couple months ago. But this is what we've pretty much zeroed in on, and think that it's probably the most efficient method of doing this, and one that will probably create the least amount of difficulty throughout the community. Pain, I should say.
The shock is going to be that we're getting a water bill. Yeah. That's going to be the shock. We're going to be getting a monthly water. Those of us that I've lived here for 22 years and I've never had a water bill, it's just been included in my assessments. And so I don't know that the that's just going to be a line item on my bill.
It will be a line item on the bill. It will be a meter install, monthly.
Exactly. And I think that probably, if you're going to make, I'm trying to think of how this is going to feel when it comes in the mail, as a constituent. And I'm thinking that I probably would look at the bill and go, crap, but then you go six bucks. That doesn't seem like a lot of money. It's a couple of days at Starbucks.
And that number is never going to change.
I get that, but you see what I'm saying? Is what I'm saying is that I think I'd rather see that than I would rather see, here's your bill and here's another bill for $723. You know what I mean? For putting the meter in. By the way, you get to pay a water bill every month, although you were paying it before, but it doesn't feel that way.
Right.
And on top of that, for the privilege of getting your water bill, we're going to charge you $723. Or however that perception is going to be, I think that the monthly fee would probably be absorbed with less impact and more comfortably, not smoke and mirrors, just more comfortably by the constituents in that particular situation. That's just my input.
Well, I think if you look at item C on that chart there, is that that's sort of the challenge we have over the next year or two.
Education.
It's once that gets in there, it's explained to the community, here's what the thing, money's coming off of your property tax bill. And now, in a couple of years, when this is all installed and we can drop the county's assessment, the county's fees that we put on there, it's really going to be probably not much change in someone's household budget. It's going to be different the way they receive the bill, but it's not going to change the economics very much at all. Mm-hmm. And those that don't use water aren't going to get billed for it. Right. Now you're getting a bill for water perhaps that you don't use.
I'm glad you
and
brought
that up. And the conservation issues, which is another
thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because the proposal that we received from National Meter is a four-month, they feel they can get it with their crews, knock it out in a four-month time frame. 6 months would be the period, but a four-month time frame. So what we were initially thinking of, 12 to 18 months, is probably once you approve the contract and they get everything on site, most likely 6 months they'll be gone and they'll all be in. So the community outreach workshops are going to need to start probably once, depending on which way you go, if we're going to do the pre-quals and pre-qual different contractors, probably along that same time frame, you're going to want to start having the community-wide workshops as to how that's going to play out.
What is the lag time or testing cycle once they're installed versus when I can expect to receive my first water bill?
Okay, what will happen is, depending on when your bill is in, depending on when your meter is installed, so we operate on a fiscal year basis, so our property taxes that we collect are on a fiscal year basis. If your meter is installed in September, we're not going to go back and collect and give you a refund. We're just not going to charge you for the remaining fiscal year. What we're going to do is we're going to send you a mock bill, so you'll know what your usage is over those 9 months that are going out, and you'll see what your bill would look like every single month, so that you can adjust and deal with it internally with your own household as to your water consumption at that point in time. If your water meter gets installed in June, you're going to get off the next month.
So the testing cycle is not very long.
It's instantaneous.
It's okay.
As soon as it gets plugged into the system, it's instantaneous.
And I'll be able to read that online. I can go to my usage. Whatever.
You'll be able to go to a. There's a customer portal, yes.
Yeah, the portal is very, it's great. I mean, it will tell you for the week, it'll pick you, it's very...
So long as the digits are in the right place.
Right. So I would just want to echo what Bob said, and that is that we've talked about this for years. We've talked about implementing this plan. I'm glad we're finally here. And it's all been about education. It's all about no surprises. It's all about getting out in the community and letting them know what's happening, why it's happening, that we don't have any options. This is a mandated policy. We're going to try to make it as easy as we can for you, and palatable as we can for you. I have a question. So somebody owns a house and they rent it. Who's responsible for the water bill, the renter or the owner?
The owner's responsible for it, but the account is in the renter's name. So, for example, Dina, why don't you explain that?
So we have them listed in Casella as a landlord, so they are ultimately responsible for that water bill. What we can do for the landlords is sometimes we send them a bill also, so that they can monitor, make sure that their renter is paying their bill on time, because ultimately they're going to be responsible if the renter just decides to walk out and leave one day. But it is in the renter's name.
Because when the renter moves out, it might be 3 months vacant. We still need to bill for at least for the 6 to 9 and the other basic fees,
yeah,
even if very minimal water is
that's
being
correct.
Used for landscaping.
Yep, so that's why we have a landlord clause. or a landlord type. And then as soon as that renter moves out, we pop it right back into the landlord's name. And if they receive the water bill, we let them know you're not going to be responsible for the water until you find a new renter.
And every water district in California does this.
Okay, well, it's new for us. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
And then one other question that comes to mind as you say that, as all of a sudden when you say send a second bill, I'm going postage meters and blah, 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 going through my head, and I'm thinking, is this all going to be set up on a digital?
We can send e-bills. Right now we can do that as
we're
well.
We're going to encourage people to opt into a paperless situation, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Where would you do that?
We have Express Bill Pay. They can call
I don't get any bills from you guys. I don't know.
Yeah, they can call in or they can pay online.
We're way ahead of the curve than you think we are.
I'm not going to pay for the second bill.
We email it to you.
The only question I would have is we have so many rental properties in Discovery Bay. I mean, there's a lot. And we have a small staff, and you have to keep track of who's moved in and who's moved out. And then a month goes by, okay, we missed a month. I mean, I know when we first started the meter program.
It's the next slide, Mark.
Okay, well, I can see this.
All right, guys, let the staff do their
thing. One more question.
That's the line after.
If at some point, is this going to be roll in or is this a do it once effort?
Everybody's starting the same.
Is everybody starting at the same time, or if these meters are installed on a basis that crosses over that fiscal year?
If they cross over fiscal year, then there will be a 2-year implementation phase.
Okay. I think
the time to do it is starting in fiscal 16-17, which starts July 1, and completed over the next, within that 12-month period. So we start the process of if we're going to go through the pre-qual process, pre-qual the contractors, get it out to bid, do the community outreach, and on July 1st, go. That way, this 2016-17 will be the last year that you're on the property tax rolls.
I'm looking to the next slide, so I don't have questions to ask.
Well, I might not actually be the next one. It might be further down. Oh, it was the next slide. You are exactly right, Director Simon. Based on metrics, No, I'm answering your question. Okay. If you look at the slide, based on the metrics, we're going to need an additional water meter tech who currently, you know, is Aaron, along with the vehicle equipment. Based upon a little over 6,000 meters, your metrics are about 1 to 3,000. And it's the same thing for your office staff as well. We're going to need an additional customer service tech. Currently, that is Willow. And so you're going to need... that would be the increase in your staffing as a result of this.
So you're saying two new employees?
Yes.
I remember when we had the meters in Discovery Bay West and we went through that issue. We said, well, we missed this, we missed that. We weren't staffed for this. You're talking about thousands of homes and hundreds of renters. And somebody rents a house, a guy who's in there 3 months, moves out, you have to track him, and then you have to... I'm not sure how you're going to do that.
It's all automated.
It should be automatic.
It's all part of the automated system.
So that if we miss a bill, it lists the landlord is how it should work.
So that's what would lead me to ask. Not that I don't trust that you guys have done the homework on this, but so you're saying so we need another technician just to be available when it doesn't automatically do what it's supposed to do?
I'll let those guys address that.
But why do we need another technician if it's all automatic?
Service.
You have service, you have leaks.
And leaks and other things, and so well, we're going to need a technician to help with that. We can't have Aaron service 6,000 homes. I just don't see that happening. So they do have leaks, they do have failures, they do have issues, we do have phone calls. I have one person for that. So, I mean.
To expand on
this question,
I can. So,
answer my question.
You're having this put in, companies giving us a warranty with them, they're putting pipes or doing whatever. So how are you going to handle it if you have one technician in 3, 4, 5 months down the road, he has a problem, I have a problem, it's all pipes?
Well, if it's part of the process of the construction process, the implementation phase, there's warranties that the contractor has in place, and there's bonds, and Greg actually is very familiar with that sort of thing, and you want to provide input on that?
You would have a 12-month warranty on anything that they do. So in the first 12 months, you would call them back to say this pipe broke and it wasn't installed properly or whatever. After that 12-month period, it's the town's. You know, so this is what I'm saying is, and you got to remember, Aaron hits leaks all the time, every single day now. And, you know, dirt moves, earth moves, rain swells in the dirt, dirt shrinks when it gets hot. You know, that movement moves pipes around subtly, and meters fail. And even if it's under warranty, someone's got to pull the meter and send it back, get a new meter. You know, so that labor occurs. And you're going to need to plan for just based on the number of meters. And, you know, even the low failure rate, you know, I mean, if it was 10% failure rate, it would be 600 a year, right? But even a 1% failure rate is 60 replacements a year, or a 0.5%, it's 30 straight up replacements a year. So not counting a replacement of a pipe or something like
that. Have we forecast what it's going to cost a year for the for Aaron, for the truck, for another staff member?
That's the next slide, water rate study.
It is the next slide.
We're kind of getting into the weeds here, and I know
that,
we're
probably not... You want to get in the weeds on this.
Well, to a certain extent, but I mean, there's...
That would fall out of the rate study of the budget.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. Some of this, we're a little ahead on some of these individual questions. I mean, I get asked three or four more questions.
Yeah, I think the concerns that the board has and everybody has been discussing are legitimate, and staff is... And looking at what's being presented, and staff has gone through it. So we can just let staff through it. Then I think at the end we can have a good discussion and give staff some direction.
Next slide, sir.
Next slide. Okay, the water rate study. You will be seeing the preliminary study at the meeting on the 17th of February. Included in the rate study is construction of well 8, which is programmed to be financed as a result of a bunch of smaller miscellaneous projects. The proposed rate increases as we see them right now are 17, 17, 4, 4, and 4 over 5 years. If you take well 8 out,
ours, you know, our numbers didn't get changed, right? Ours say 14.25. Our slide's different than yours. Oh.
No, you're
okay.
You're page
ahead.
There we go. Thank you.
If you take well 8 out, remember well 8 is replacement for well 5 where we have the high salinity. If you take well 8 out, it only changes your percentage from 17 to 15%. The reason being is because a very small portion of your rates are actually paying for the annual payment on a basis for 30 years. Okay? The majority of that is to cover losses in revenues due to the drought and due to conservation.
Right.
So it's the what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right, in this situation, and it's that unfortunate situation. You encourage people to conserve, and guess what? We're going to raise your rates for doing so. And that's the unfortunate situation here, but that's the proposal that you're going to see at the next board meeting.
And that's
the education
piece that Bob was talking about. When we educate these people, we have to let them know, and Mark brought this up many times, is that you may look at your bill and go, hey, my bill's due, I'm going to use less water. Well, guess what? Your rates are going to go up because you have a swimming pool full of water you gotta pay for. And no matter how much you consume, you have an infrastructure you have to pay for. And no matter how much water you use, you still gotta pay for that infrastructure. And we just need to educate the community over and over and over again about that.
I agree with that. Just as a thought, what's the average water bill for meter? Is there an average?
Annual average, basically, or monthly average. In December, you could pay anywhere from $6 to $12.
Well, summer,
okay, so probably around, I would say, probably
$300-$400. $300-$400. So, okay, take the 17% increase, in about $45 over the year. So, $3 or $4 or $5 more per month on the average.
Mm-hmm.
On the 17%, I actually have that number for you. I don't know what the current bill average is for right now.
I'll just use 300.
Well, I can tell you that based upon the 17-17-444, in next fiscal year, the average bill would be $38. It would go to 44, 46, 48, and 50 over the 5-year period. That would be the average.
Have Bartle Wells looked at any way to smooth those rates out?
We discussed it, and you can certainly do that. My thought process is, it's certainly your discretion, is to, it's like pulling a Band-Aid off. Just do it and get it over with. But that's certainly up to you. And the 4% is basically an inflation number. Yeah.
I tend to agree with staff on that. Just make it happen. You got to pay it at some point. So get it over.
Anything else on the water? Wastewater, again, they're going to have the preliminary study view for the meeting on the 17th. Included in the rate study is the construction of the filtration project, $7.4 million, and $1.5 million in improvements at plant number one. And I want to talk to you about that. The proposed rate increases are 14.25, 14.25, 4.44. If you pull, $1.5 million, and this is something you have to pay me now or pay me later, if you were to pull the $1.5 million off of the proposed rate study, your numbers would be 10, 10, 4, 4, 4. 10%, 10%. So you're looking about a 4.25% delta for that $1.5 million. Denitrification is not included in the rate study. The finance team and I and the finance committee have discussed this a while ago. We met a while ago on it. And I am fairly confident that with the number of homes that are still coming in, even if Pantages and Newport Point don't materialize, that based upon those fees that will be coming in from the remaining lakes developments, as well as money we currently have in the bank, as well as money that we've cobbled together over the past few years in addition to the $3 million base reserves we've had, we've got about 4.6 now. So you got about 4.6 there, you got about another little over $1 million in the developer deposit account. And I think that you can probably pay for denitrification or come close to it and maybe need a bridge loan for a while to support the balance of it without having to do a bond financing. As I know you don't, I know it's not this board's desire to go out and do a third financing in 3 or 4 more years. So staff heard that loud and clear, and I think that with prudent financing, fiscal planning, with the development that's coming on, there are 192 lots in Discovery Bay West that are currently being developed, and that doesn't include the lots that are developed that aren't built upon yet. So they still have a ways to go over there. So that's what we're recommending at this point in time. That's today, 5 years from now, or 3 years from now, it may change.
What's the anticipated cost of denitrification?
About $7 million.
Currently sitting at about 7.5.
Is that an escalated price for the where we go is at today's dollars?
It'll be more in 2020.
Yeah.
Well, is that the number for filtration that includes 9.37?
Just by coincidence, they're similar numbers. Okay. So the filtration's running around 7.4, and then the denitrification 4 years in today's dollars is also by coincidence like 7.5. But if you, that's, you know, you'll have inflation if you push it off, so it'll probably be more like 8 or something 4 years from now, something like that.
The reason I bring up plant one is it's how many years old, 40 years old?
Well, the first very beginning of plant one's even older than that. I mean, plant one was the first part of what created Discovery Bay. It started in the 70s as a pond. You know, and then it's had upgrades in the late 70s, early 80s. And then that was really the last upgrade until we did 2000. 2002, we did the expansion for plant two, and we added a headworks to plant one at that time. But, it, you know, in terms of the clarifiers and the oxidation ditch, that's all been there since the very early 80s. So we've been looking at, and Veolia's been assessing, Bernie's there. You know, a lot of that equipment now is getting to end of life on the equipment. And you've noticed, like if you've been paying attention, you know, we've been buying control panels and we've been electrical equipment over there steadily for the last 2 or 3 years because the electrical gear is just so bad that we can't even keep it running if we don't replace it. But that will go towards, we've also had CIP items towards, you know, painting equipment, and then, you know, now we start to have the discussion, like, you know, some of this equipment, a paint job ain't going to get it anymore. Some of this equipment's going to have to be replaced. There is some structural work that has to take place in plant one. And so the $1.5 million there is predominantly for new electrical MCC and some other projects at plant one. And in order to do that work, we have to shut the whole plant off because we're going to change, like, the entire electrical system. At the plant, just the electrical equipment, you know. The wiring is still 40 years old, et cetera. So the question is, it's sort of been, you know, you're about to start putting some serious money into plant one. It's coming. We have 1.525 on the books right now, but that doesn't include, you know, replacement of clarifiers, fixing some concrete, and then the rotors, the ditch, et cetera. So we think there's more than that coming. My gut tells me you're probably going to end up dumping $3 million total into plant one to put it on a standard where you can run it for the next 20 years. You know, this is how far we got to go. If you don't take care of concrete, you know, you get 40 years old. If you take care of it, you can keep it moving. If you let it go and you don't maintain it, it'll deteriorate to the point where you've got to replace it. You can't save it, you know, kind of thing. You know, it's not dire straits, but it is at an age where we have to go in and, you know, we got to remodel it, essentially. You know, it's a 40-year-old house. You got to remodel it, pick it up a little bit, and dust it off if you want it to go down the road another 20 years. So the question has really come up as we started to talk seriously about, okay, are we ready to do the MCC project, these other projects? Do we want to spend that money at plant one? Or would you rather invest in moving the plant from plant one to plant two and having all the facilities at plant two? So there are some limitations to plant one. So there are clarifiers at plant one, but they were an older style and older design. They're not as deep. They don't have some features. So plant one doesn't produce water quality as good as plant two does, which was designed later with a little newer technology. So, you know, you can say, are we throwing money after bad or not, it's kind of an important decision for the board. What's the key about this is we're going to add denitrification to the timeline for denitrification. We have to start designing in 2020. We have to be like done operating and everything by 2022. So what would be important is the decision, something like if we're seriously considering should we move the plant or invest it at plant two, you certainly would ask the question, well, for 4 more years, would I really spend another $3 million at plant one and then turn around and move it all to plant two? And then my answer to that is, you know, you probably wouldn't want to do that. You'd want to save your money that you're investing in plant one and use it to help move the plant to plant two. One thing's important is when you get to denitrification, you're only going to build it where that's where you build it. You know, once you build it, you're there. That's your spot. You know, so if there's any question about plant one, you wouldn't want to build denitrification there. and then decide later, you know, the plant's too old or it's too problematic, you know, we're going to move it.
Explain why you would have denied a plant one.
Well, the denitrification process interties with the oxidation ditch. So it interacts with the ditch. They work together. So where the oxidation ditch is, right now we have three of them. We have three essentially, three little boxes for denitrification that attach to that ditch. That's essentially how it works. So
and they're going to attach to a ditch no matter where the ditch is.
No matter where the ditch is, that's where it's going. You know, and so.
So there's no need to move to build another oxidation, to move plant one to plant two.
No, you do not have to move plant one to plant two.
Okay.
You do not have to do that. The issues are the age of plant one. They're more practical issues. You know, the age of plant one, and there are some limitations to plant one. It's not quite as good a plant as plant two is. And then there's also some, you know, operations impacts of constantly having to go back and forth across Highway 4 in terms of time, in terms of your operations time, you know, so in terms of operators operating things with the plant split. So there are some issues to running plant one.
We just spent $16 million building an aux ditch and a clarifier.
Oh,
to move plant one would be another $16 million.
Well, it wasn't 16, no, but we spent $6 million, six and a half, right in there. For the secondary project where we built an oxidation ditch clarifier.
Yeah, okay, so another, because we have to put in two more clarifiers, so that would be
$7 million. So if we move plant one, we would move an oxidation ditch and two clarifiers and some other improvements. So you're likely in there at $7 million. That's correct. You know,
versus spending three.
Versus, I think realistically, you're in the three. You know, we haven't gone through everything, you know, we haven't looked at everything, but I think realistically, you're at least in the three. To put a facelift on it and say, you know, it's reasonably standard, good to go for the next 20 years. We still have to do maintenance, right? But, you know, the rotors are the original rotors. The paracrine method is the original paracrine method. You can repair equipment, and you do repair equipment, but you can only do that so often before it's just done. You know, you can't, if it's more expensive to try and keep repairing it, it's just buy it.
Right. You mentioned that the plant one doesn't operate as efficiently as plant two, just because of age. If I heard correctly, is the size of the oxidation ditch different?
The issue of plant one is the clarifier depth, and it's designed for the clarifiers. So the clarifiers separate the solids from the liquids in the wastewater. Okay, so, you know, like if you look at our effluent, it's nice and clear, right? And our wastewater, if you look at the ditch, it's brown, right? So the clarifier separates all the brown from the water so it goes clear. But if it doesn't do a good enough job of that, then it affects everything downstream because the water's not quite clear as it goes through the rest of the process, which is the UV and moving UV filter project as well. So the issue is, you can put a new mechanism in, which is what I'm recommending that you're going to need to do, is put new mechanisms in. But you still can't make it deeper. I mean, you're not going to redig it and destroy the concrete and start over. That'd just be building a new clarifier. So, you know, we can replace the equipment and make sure that the equipment is sound to go the next life cycle that you guys need. But there are some limitations that we will not be able to overcome just because of what's there in plant one.
Can you give me an example of just something in gallons? The clarifier at plant one, how many gallons it treats versus the clarifier at plant two, how many gallons it treats?
I can, you know, on paper we have a gallon, but Bernie's experience has been what? Is it the capacity the same as clarifiers at plant one, throw plant two?
Well, because plant one, two, they have about 800 MGD, 800,000 gallons. Plant one, the clarifier five, one is about 500. Give or take, but we don't run clarifier one very often because we have operational issues where it won't settle because of the depth of the clarifier, so we have NTU issues most of the time with clarifier number one, which, as you know in the past, when you start running into NTU issues, you start running into your 7-day media violations when you call it.
Right, and I appreciate that information. I think that this is, if we look as a board, We're making a decision for future boards, and I think that we should somehow schedule a study session, if we will, on this specific issue sometime in a fairly near future, because we've got this denitrification issue that we've got to start. And I think this board really has to go through all of it and determine whether you stay in one or you don't, because there's a time issue here that we've really got to think about.
Well, there's a time issue, and then in terms of truly I have to build new capital facilities. And then there's also a coordination timing issue with maintenance. For instance, it's on the books to replace the MCC at Plant 1. Well, if you really were going to move it in 4 years, we'll band-aid you together for the next 4 years and get you over to Plant 2, right? You know what I'm saying? But if you're not going to do that, and the commitment is no, we're staying at Plant 1, then we would proceed with some of the larger, more expensive replacement items that have to occur at Plant number 1 too. So, you know, both those things need direction from the board. And the real thing is, if there's consideration to take Plant 1 to Plant 2, recognizing that you're paying more, you know, it costs more to go to Plant 2, you're gonna have to move, that costs more, okay? But if there's consideration for that, then staff can move forward with do some engineering and put some real numbers to it. Right now, you know, we're doing back of the envelope estimates and things like that, just so you have an idea of what the topic is and what we're talking about.
I think that's a good idea, but I'd also like to see what it would, rather than move everything from Plant 1, like the Ox Ditch, which is, what's the cost to build the Ox Ditch?
The Ox Ditch is $2 million.
Right. So I would even like to see an option of rebuilding the clarifiers at Plant 1, if that's really the issue, and not move the Ox Ditch and save $2 million. I mean, if we can spend $5 million instead of $7 million, and we're going to spend $3 million anyway, it makes it a much more beneficial decision.
That's why I think we should.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But look at all those options.
Every single type of option. After going through that in detail, we'll be able to come to the right conclusion.
Well, Stantec did the master plan for us and is very familiar with facilities. The real question is the desire of the board to engage engineering work to try and go through some of these options and put some real cost to them so that, you know, people make an informed decision.
What kind of cost are we talking about?
You know, well, I mean, it'd probably be a study. I mean, we're probably $30,000 to $40,000 to analyze these out and see the impact relative to the master plan, because they did the modeling and all that for the master plan. And then, you know, then you'd have at least your costs. You know what your answers are, what your costs. It is a good point that you brought up, Kevin, that we could rebuild the clarifiers one at a time. We could take out, you know, we could take out the concrete and build a new clarifier in that spot for some amount of money. I'd have to look at, you know, there's going to be shoring and some other things.
So, there's nothing wrong with the Ox Ditch. Why move the Ox Ditch?
But it still might be less expensive than moving the entire plant. That's a good point.
Would be an option I would want to look at.
So why don't we do this instead of Bill's, right. This needs to be a study session, and we need hard numbers, and so we cover everything. We can sit here and talk about this all day long, and we're not going to know what's going
on today. We know it's obsolete in all schools.
So let's plan that and go from there. We can move on.
I agree. One thing I've been thinking is it's 15 acres down there, right around 15 acres, and it's part of it. It could be golf course homes.
That would be part of the component. If you did move, what's the benefit, and if that land was sold, that helped pay for some of this, it doesn't cost the ratepayers anything. But so that's part of that whole matrix that needs to be explored, and it may not make sense to move it.
Right.
And it may. We don't know.
We just don't know.
Okay. Let's move on. Schedule that. We were fairly fortunate that we were PG&E's, they're like just raining money down. If you recall, PG&E was working on their pipeline over by Safeway Shopping Center on both sides of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
In doing so, they brought all of their water that they were collecting to our treatment plant for processing. They couldn't drop it in the Delta because of the Clean Water Act. And we had to test the water, make sure the water had to be sampled to make sure that it wasn't contaminated, and we accepted it. And we accepted that water. It was 3,114,000 gallons. We have received, or we're about to receive, a check for approximately $314,000 from PG&E. In addition, we already received a check from them for a smaller project they had over in the lakes of just under $13,000. We received $5,000 today, and we're going to get about $18,000 from them for the, if we just choose to do the top lot. When you get one-time revenues that are not restricted, we've been sitting and talking about projects that would be nice to take care of, but we really haven't had the funding to do so here at the community center. We also have some projects at the wastewater treatment plant that we want to talk to you about. So at the wastewater treatment plant, Mark's parking garage, we're going to add some insulation to that so that it doesn't rattle and shake. And if you recall, one of the cost-saving items we put in was to put aggregate-based, rock-based down in lieu of asphalt or concrete. We've talked to the contractor, and they've given us a cost to put asphalt down of about $15,000. That's right, about
$15,000? Yeah, it was right around $15,000 to replace the AV inside the building with asphalt, and then there's some rock directly in front of the building that would also be replaced with asphalt.
And then to replace it with concrete, and staff's recommending that we use part of this money, one-time revenues for one-time expenses, not operations, ongoing operations, for that. As well as we received a notice of violation from the Regional Water Quality Control Board recently when they came out and did an inspection. They've never said anything about it before, but all of a sudden they have an issue with our biosolids area in that they want us to put asphalt so that when it rains and if there's any leachate, that it doesn't leach into the ground, it goes back into the storm drain system or sewer system. So that we just got a bid on that for $69,000 to do that.
You're talking about the floors of the biosolids?
No.
The biosolids is stored in the dryers, and then when they get full, we move it outside.
Yeah.
There's an asphalt
between
pad.
The two?
Yes. Between the two, there's an asphalt pad, and there's some, Virgil stacks some concrete blocks there that kind of hold it there. But the area around that pad and between the pad and the drainage is all rock.
Yeah.
That's what it was originally.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, well, it's great that you have an asphalt pad, but then it rains on the pad and it's out there and it runs on your rock, and that's not really good. So do something about it. That's basically long term.
So we're recommending that we use some of those funds for that, for those projects right
there. And by the way, that is an NOV from the state. We actually don't have,
you have a choice.
I was going to say, that's not an optional. I
mean, whether PG&E gave us money or not, you'd be spending $70,000 to put asphalt up there. Okay.
And, but there's no fine attached to it at this point.
No.
It's just a direction. It's a directive.
Well, it started as a directive to tell us what you're going to do about it. We sent a letter yesterday.
Okay.
You know,
exactly. At the community center, listed a bunch of projects here that we'd like to address. One of which has been the request of our canine community is to add a small dog area to the bigger area so that the big dogs and the little dogs don't interact and have issues. And so that project, I think, can be part of an Earth Day project. And in the past, we've gotten donations for that. Herwood Engineering has generously contributed over the years. Veolia has been our prime sponsor. So we've gotten some money out of them for that. So that's the project we're looking at this year. An accessible ramp and gate at the pool, where last year we had a gentleman, what?
Yeah.
Is a guy?
Wheelchair.
In a wheelchair, and it was awfully difficult for him to get to the pool when there's steps. And so that would provide an all-surface, all-weather, all-accessible ramp for that sort of thing. Whenever you leave here at night, you know it's dark out front, it's dark out back. We'd like to replace some of those lights, improve the lighting. Some of the work we'll do in-house, some of it we'll contract out. There's concrete trippers. Those are the steps that you have right as you're entering the building that need to be torn out, or if you walk out there and see them, they're in poor condition and they don't match up, and they're not ADA accessible. So we're looking at replacing those. The enclosure for the pool equipment, that green shed, not the green shed, but the green overhang building, it is in need of repair. It's in need of replacement. That's the biggest ticket item. The $5,000 that we're gonna get from PG&E, where they gave us the check today, we'd like to use that money to purchase poolside equipment, chase lounges, umbrellas, good quality stuff. We've been getting by buying chase lounges for people's backyards at Lowe's and umbrellas at Ace Hardware. But I'd get more of an industrial commercial strength you'd see in a hotel. And so we're proposing to use the $5,000 from PG&E for that. The gate on the south side, there's a big access gate that's over there on the south side. It's in horrible condition. It takes three guys to move it, and we might get that repaired. We got a bid on that. Repair the barbecue area, repair the barbecue, drop in a new grill set, replace the tops of the tables with stainless steel. Resurface courts 3 and 4. Those are the only two courts that didn't get resurfaced. Those are the ones that are closest to us, but furthest away. So they're on this side and furthest down. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the back are 5, 6, 7, and 8. And those two courts are very similar to courts 1 and 2 that required a complete rehabilitation. They weren't just a new paint upgrade. They were complete renovations. And we did those two courts, 1 and 2, for $36,000. So we were talking about it and think that maybe courts 3 and 4 could be converted into pickleball courts for the community. Leave the courts out at Cornell as they are for rec play and put some nice courts over here for the pickleball community. That way they can have tournaments. There's 4 nice courts. It's a good facility for them. There's restrooms. There's not restrooms out there, but there's even better restrooms over here. And certainly could be something that can bring more people here to the community center. Small archery equipment, I'm not exactly sure what it is. It's some kind of poles that they use for something. Having to hang, is it to hang the...
to hang a backdrop to keep the arrows from...
From going out into the street?
Okay. I'm gonna nail somebody.
Into the dog park.
Yeah, exactly.
We've done a lot of really great things here. And the building is, when you walk in, it's a nice building and the facility is great, but it was a 50-year roof and the roof's 40 years old. It's not leaking, fortunately. It's actually structurally not in bad shape, but it's not gonna last forever. And so we have an opportunity here, I think, to replace a community center roof consistent with some of the other buildings in town. For example, like across the street at the shopping center, a steel type roof. Similar type roof, possibly like over at the marina, at the boardwalk, and at the yacht club. So that's an item that we're looking to replace and get board support on that. The play structure at the top lot, $65,000, and that includes removing what's there, renovating what would not be coming out, which is the picnic areas, correct?
Yeah,
and then removing the swing and.
No, the swing would remain.
The swing would remain, and then the play structure would be replaced, and PG&E's indicated they would pay for the play structure, and then a poured-in-place surface. That park, if you've ever drive by there, it actually gets quite a bit of use. There's a lot of moms walk their kids from that neighborhood in there, and it would be nice that play structure's been there for a long time. There's no shade in it, and it'd be a nice asset to add to the community.
So if PG&E comes up with $65,000.
They're not going to come up with $65,000. They're coming up with about
$20,000. Remember, they said they're only
just the structure.
Okay.
And their grant only allows them to cover
so
the structure.
You've spent all of the $300,000 and a little bit more. So
Mark, it's the next slide.
That's the next slide. I knew that.
So, the projects at the community at the wastewater treatment plant about $108,600. The community center, $240,600. For 364 with revenues of 332. leaving a deficit of 31,000. The $10,000 for the dog park, I don't think it'll come in at that price. I think it'll be significantly less than that, but we'll definitely get our donations to cover that. We are anticipating another $15,000 or so. PG&E is in the process of doing another dewatering project in Knightson, and so they're going to be bringing their dewatering to us as well. It's a much smaller project, similar to the size of the one they did over in the lakes. We hope it's a really, really big one again, like it was out here, but we expect it to be much smaller. And then with the $15,000 or $17,000-$20,000 that they indicated today, that eliminates the deficit when you throw all those in there together. That's all. Those are a lot of projects that really have a huge benefit to the community. And it, you know, the community center addresses some issues of the treatment plant and the top lot. And I think that it really brings about an opportunity for us to use one-time monies for one-time expenses and to really do some nice things here at the community center that will be very well received by the community.
Even at 32 grand, we're still knocking a ton of stuff off of our bucket list wish list.
Huge.
Yeah, we're paying 10%.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good value, actually.
Hey, Rick, has any thought or analysis been done when we talk about doing the roof here and improvements at the community center in terms of installing solar?
Has not. We have not discussed that. It has not been a discussion item.
Because then there may be, back to PG&E, there may be PG&E grants and state grants that would allow us to put a solar project here and perhaps reduce some of our operating costs.
Yeah, the place to do that would be over by the swimming pool when you build your new structure and put solar there for your heating and on this building for your power.
Part of the roof design, yeah.
I mean, that's going to, you know, that's a big item, you know. And to be honest with you, $40,000, we've contacted a couple roofers. We haven't gotten back to us. That was a number we pulled. So it might be $60,000. It might be $30,000.
Standing seam is pretty expensive.
What's that?
Standing seam is pretty expensive.
I don't know what that is.
That's the metal roof.
Oh. We've got some great roofers in town. So.
Well, certainly you'll get options on that if we go that direction.
The other item that I didn't see on there, give us some information. The pool has a leak camera, but that's not in this mix. Do we have any kind of a number on what it takes to get that?
We're, right now, the leak that's in the pool, we're not sure if it's from the drain at the bottom or if it's from one of the skimmers. If it's from the one of the skimmers, it should be a relatively simple fix. Relatively speaking, we do have some issues with it. The drain at the bottom is a much more larger problem. It's draining about a half inch every 2 to 3 days. We didn't know it was leaking because it's on an autofill system. And so when we were closed over the Christmas holiday, Jeff, who works for us, is also a certified pool operator, he shut the system down. And when he came back, and there had been a little bit of rain, and the elevation dropped. So it raised the flags, and he's been monitoring ever since. The contractors have been out. Brian knows more about that than I do. They've been out looking at it, and
do we have a water meter on this property?
Yes.
Should we all see that change then?
Yeah, I believe they just installed.
It's not. It's so gradual.
It's been there for a while, but what you have to do. There's two water meters that serve this site. You have a main one that serves the whole building, and then the whole complex. Then you have another one that just serves this building because of the restrooms and whatever. So you would take the main reading off the main one, deduct the one that serves this building, and then you should have that usage to know if it's what goes in the pool or sprinklers or whatever it might be.
It's a very minor, I don't want to say it's minor, but I'm not sure that a half inch every 3 days on an autofill would really be noticeable. So we're evaluating that right now, but that's something that
it's not manifesting itself anywhere else then.
No, it's not. It didn't come up. It's leaching into the ground. It's going into the groundwater.
Regardless, it needs to be fixed, and I think we need to have a number on that to add to this list, a real number on it to verify, and a real number on the roof before we kind of get going down any one of these roads.
Right. Yeah, we've got a couple contractors on the roofs that Brian's reached out to and just haven't gotten back to us. So I just threw that in there as a placeholder.
Okay, but this list not only at Plant 2 and the community center items. Will this come back to us for final decision?
Of course.
Get these other ones?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because there's going to be a revenues, Dina's going to have to do a budget amendment to address the revenues, and then there's going to be an adjustment for expenditure. So it'll come back to you at some point in time.
I have one comment. I did get the cost from the contractor to do the concrete and the asphalt together, and there's a mobilization for that asphalt that creates a base charge. So to do the wastewater projects is going to be about 118. It'll be about 10,000 more because you got this mode. We are going to try and see if maybe we can't time it with the asphalt for the other end, because a lot of the asphalt is that big moat. There's very little area to do, but there's a moat charge for it.
Yeah, but the estimate we got that we received the other day for that pad out there by a solid $69,000. We might be able to have the contractor do that for a much lower price.
We can't do the asphalt in front of the building for the building's expense. So we might be able to coordinate it, but I'm just saying I got the proposed change order from the contractor now for both asphalt in front of the building and the concrete in the building, and it was around 41 total. And it's about 10,000 more than what you have here. And we might be able to reduce it somewhat if we could time it with the other asphalt work, but that would reduce it. And then in terms of coming back to the board, our existing contractor is building a metal building. It's on order for the manufacturing of the building, and he's gonna mow, but we will need to bring a change order for approval to the board for the wastewater treatment plant items. So that would be the official approval, at least of that portion of the money. Because it has to come to you for a change order.
Okay. Any other questions on these? It appears staff needs to just keep moving forward.
On to the next slide. We're almost done. Well, my portion's almost done. You have the budget calendar in front of you. This is the kickoff to the budget. It's going to start getting busier as the months progress, as well as how the rate studies come out and get played. You're going to end up having the Prop 218 hearings kind of concurrently, probably, with the budget process, and that's going to be taking place over the next few months. So the critical dates there for the board are that the staff will be meeting with the subcommittee. There's three subcommittee meetings scheduled. If the subcommittee can look at their dates on April 7th, 28th, and May the 5th, I know that's a ways out, but those are the dates we're looking at having staff interaction with the subcommittee. Rolling out the budget to the board at the meeting of May 18th, that's just a rollout. Here it is. We'll talk about it at the next meeting. It'll take 2 weeks to read it, go through it. Presenting the budget at the June 1st meeting and adopting it on June the 15th. So there will be three subcommittee meetings we'll hit the subcommittee possibly three times if the third one's necessary. And it will touch the board three times as well. May 25th, June 1st, and June the 15th.
Any comments?
I'm just wondering why we're at the May 25th meeting. I don't know why we can't do it on the 18th.
The budget will be adopted at the second meeting in June, which would be June the 15th. And based upon...
Why do I have a special meeting on May 25th? Why can't we just have it on May 18th?
The board workshop, the budget workshop, on May the 18th is a regular board meeting, okay? and it'll just be rolled out to the board at that point in time. It'll just be in a...
We'll have to have a special meeting on May 25th, you're saying.
And then you have a special workshop on the 25th for the budget workshop on the 25th.
Yeah.
And then if you feel comfortable in going through it, you can do it as a regular board meeting, just as an item at a board meeting. If the board and the committee are comfortable with what's being presented and how it's moving forward, it can certainly be adjusted. You don't have to do the workshop. You can do it as an agenda item at a regular board meeting. That'll be your call.
Yeah, and it just depends on how many items are on the regular agenda.
Right.
Whether that agenda's pretty full or not. But I'm assuming that board discussion on the budget is probably going to be an hour and a half or so, I would assume.
Probably going through, that's about average. Yeah. At least an hour to go through it. So,
as we get a little closer, we can fine tune that. But I think this budget outline, I think, works. Yeah.
Looking good, Bob?
Yes.
Time, we have times on there. And those are difficult for direct assignments, late afternoons.
Well, maybe they're better.
I know. You can talk to Dina about
some
that.
Some just work for a living.
Talk to Dina about that.
Offers, I'm just saying,
okay. You could switch under another committee.
No.
Like anyway. You're not king, but you've got to have flexibility on those things. I'm very flexible. Look at how much advanced notice you get.
Moving along. The next slide is, each year we look to you. The projects that the board is interested in, we generally hear about them before the workshop, because we've been working with not only the water wastewater committee, but we've also been working with the Parks and Landscape and Rec Committee. So we're familiar with what's happening and reading the tea leaves on those committees and how you feel about those. But what is out there that you would like us to focus on or would like to bring back to you for consideration? We've got Treatment Plant 1, potential options there. We've got the items on the list we just showed you a few minutes ago, all those projects. But there's so many other things that we do over the course of the year, and sometimes they just come up and we bring them to you, and some of them are in the budget. For the most part, we try and go through the budget items. So now we're looking to you.
Just again, it'd be nice to have a landscape or a park master plan at some point in this town, and so if that could be a discussion for future items.
The one thing that kind of woke me up a little bit is just our brief discussion on this plant one, move or no move, and I think that's a very serious item we have to discuss, and I think that we need to discuss having professional folks help us put together a real actual study on that with all the ramifications. Selling property, not selling property, keeping it there, dig the clarifier, whatever, every combination, every single thing. And I know that's going to take a little time, so I would like to see staff get started on something like that as soon as possible. To get it back to us in time, so we're not rushed. We're not going to have to make a fast decision because we put it off too long. That would be my goal.
I'm taking that. I would have Greg contact Stantec and get a proposal to us. We can bring it to the board on the 17th.
Yeah. I'm fine.
You are for now.
I think that the most critical thing, and obviously Bill and I are in the Water Wastewater Committee, so we're more keyed in on here, but I think I agree 100% with let's take a look at those options, let's make sure we make a decision that's going to,
it's a 20-year decision.
Yeah, lease money's not always the right decision, so let's make sure we get all the options in front of us so we can make a good long-term economical decision that's going to benefit the town going forward. I think in 20 years, the only person that's going to be left on this board is probably Mark. So but I do care. Don't get me wrong.
Meetings will be at 7:30 in the evening.
And
and
we know we're going to have to have an ADA ramp for the dais.
For him?
Put an ADA ramp in for you so you can get up here.
I'm about to have to vote on that too.
You'll vote no.
I'm just telling Bill, the way we get paid, I can't afford to quit this job. I've been able to buy 3 new pieces of property since I got on the board. It's been fantastic.
Are there any things here in the boardroom that you'd like to see? Any things from a board standpoint that would make your jobs easier in interaction with us?
Personally, I don't. I think just the one little tweak would be to make sure that the public mic works well, and so that the public can.
It picks it up. It picks it up when you're standing, when you're at it. It picks it up on the.
A lot of times we can't. I mean, we can actually get a mic stand. You can get a regular stand, and that mic will clip right on the top of it. It's actually face high, just like bands are using. I mean, it's. I've probably got a couple of them someplace.
Yeah. Well.
Well, we actually have them. They just, they're not very good podiums, so we'll have to find something with a podium with a stand that's a little bit better.
Well, you can actually put the stand right in front of the podium.
There's one right behind Chris. Yeah.
So we're still talking about goals for this year and next year. So again, a goal would be to park consolidation with the county, get that handled. Second thing is settle with Hoffman. Let's get our community center funds. And I think those are major priorities on the park side.
I would agree. Yeah, we need to settle the Hoffman deal up. Get that out of there. Do any staff want to tell us that we need to do better?
Make your meeting shorter.
Yeah.
The last one was way too long.
Yeah. I think that if we have some of those types of meetings come up in the future, that we could probably postpone those meetings and get more done.
Well, that was presented, but it wasn't accepted, so.
If the board makes a decision with 3 votes, then that's how you work it.
I've got one suggestion on the park side.
Okay.
Leave the park system the way it is with the county. We will lose a lot of revenue if we bring them in.
With the parks coming to us comes the revenue.
You think we'll get 100% of that?
Well, that's why it's hung up. That's why it's hung up with county council, because we want it all, and they want to keep a portion of it. That's why it's still hung up. If it doesn't come with all the money, it's not a deal.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah. So we get all the money, or they keep paying. Yeah, they're gonna have to pay anyway. If they don't give us all the money, they still have to pay all the money.
They don't have the right to
reapportion. Well, that
has to do with right-of-way issues, because there's some of that that's right-of-way.
Right, I agree with you.
Yeah. Anyway, but we maintain them anyway.
I think we'll be more efficient with the money than they do.
That's fine. We'll get that out here.
But Brian is right. Without the money,
we'll never get started without the money. Is that the end of the story?
Unless you guys have anything else.
I got a point of information, just because we're all here today, it's a good time. I just received an email from Julian Neal over at the county administrator's office yesterday. On February 11th, in San Joaquin County, LAFCO will be making a decision with regards to the BBID funding issue. So I just want to make you guys aware of that. If you want to go out there or not, it's at their chambers meeting on San Joaquin Street, 44 North San Joaquin Street. If you want information, I'll get it to Rick, and Rick can put it out.
I've read that also, and I think that their staff was agreeing that they're going to take San Joaquin is going to push it over to Contra County, and Contra Costa County, LAFCO was agreeing that they're going to take it.
That's what they're saying, but right. They're having a meeting with public comment and.
I got a call from the executive director of San Joaquin LAFCO the other day. In fact, I know you just got it late yesterday afternoon, but it's in your Friday letter. Jim, I can't remember his last name, San Joaquin LAFCO, he called me to give me a heads up that on the 11th of February, the proposed action is to literally hand off jurisdiction of San Joaquin County.
Right, so that, is that going to be a consent item?
No, I know, exactly. And the meeting on February the 10th is San Joaquin County, and their action is going to be if Contra Costa County on the 10th,
right.
If San Joaquin hands off jurisdiction, we will accept that. So that's taking place on the 10th of the 11th.
So it's a done deal.
Right.
Yes.
We don't necessarily have to go.
I'm just making it guys aware of it.
Correct, and appreciate it.
Because if they ever go, what does the town think about that? And there's nobody there to respond.
Well, we can send them a letter. But what I do want to say is that once Contra Costa County gets into those discussions, we certainly should be at every one of those meetings. If they're going to discuss this stuff, once they start it, it'll have to go to Contra Costa County.
Yeah, right over here, sure.
We should be, some representative right. from us should be there at every one of those meetings.
We once this meeting is over, we do have a closed session at 11:30. So
at 11 o'clock, it says
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock?
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Perfect.
Rod
will be here momentarily.
Any other items we want to discuss? Close meeting.
Thank you.